Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. The following interview is designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be. Your host, Derek Champagne, is the founder and CEO of The Artist Evolution, a full-service agency building successful brands, marketing tools, and campaigns, and also the author of the best-selling book, Don't Buy a Duck. And now, let's begin today's Leadership Series interview.
Welcome to the Business Leadership Series, where our goal is to inspire you to become the best leader that you can be. I've got a great guest today, Bobby Albert. He is the president of Value Driven Leadership, and he has a passion for helping other leaders build inspiring workplace cultures through value-driven leadership. Bobby, welcome to the program today.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very excited about being on this and look forward to our discussion today.
Well, I've been reading several of the topics that you consult on, and each one is more intriguing than the next for me. So why don't you start at the beginning for us about values-driven culture? What does that mean to you?
Well, culture is, it's really about people. No matter if you're talking about the culture of our country or the culture in an organization, it's really about people. And what I've discovered is that, because I often get asked, well, what does culture look like? And that's a pretty hard question to answer. And the best way I can describe it is it's kind of like the wind. And I mean, has anybody ever seen the wind?
No.
But, you know, when I... sitting in my office, looking outside my window, I see the leaves, you know, the wind's blowing. I know it's blowing because I see the leaves moving in the trees and the bushes, you know, shaking and things of that nature. But what we see is the effect of the wind, but we don't see the wind. And culture is a lot like that. And that's the reason why culture is so hard to define. Because it is like the wind.
That's fascinating. So tell me, what does it mean then for values-driven leadership? What does that look like? How what does a leader do with that?
Well, I've used an illustration before. It's kind of like a tree, and culture and the leadership aspect of it. In other words, if you think of like a farmer, for example, when they plant a tree, they water it, they cultivate it, they prune it, what happens is the fruit of the tree is the effect of that is from all of the hard labor of the farmer in doing all of the right things with that tree. And that's the reason why I say that culture is the fruit and not the goal. Because a lot of, you know, especially today, you know, culture and engaging employees is a very popular thing. And you know, like, let's take like in Silicon Valley, where there's a lot of people that are competing for employees and trying to retain employees, you know, very qualified people. Right. There's what I've been observing is there's this thought they end up making culture a goal and rather than it being the fruit of doing a lot of the right things. And what I mean by that, there's this thought like, well, if we'll just bring in the break room a ping pong table and provide all the food and the beverage that people want to drink, you know, and eat free and all those kind of things. But what's happened, they end up making it a goal and they can't figure out why their people are not more excited about working there or more productive in their work. But if you go back to the tree, if you think of the roots are kind of really – like the core values, the purpose, core values, of course, being who you are, the purpose being why you exist, the vision, you know, where you're going. And the trunk and the branches of a tree are really the leadership style. And what I've what I have experienced and observed is the best leadership style is a participative leadership style that I call engage to lead. And there's a particular tool that we have used in our company. We call it the 1-2-3. And what it is that before you, you know, at the beginning of a decision-making process and before you make a decision, you ask yourself three questions, and that is, who can help me make a better decision? Who's going to have to carry it out? And who's going to be impacted by that? And you get those people involved, or people, someone that represents that group of people involved in the decision-making process. And that's where in my company, it was kind of like the secret sauce. Hmm. But it took me, I can't say that I was always that way. In the earlier days of our company, I was always, you know, I was this entrepreneur and I was Mr. Idea Man. And this innovator and trying this and trying that and, you know, those kind of things. And so when I got an idea, this is the way I used to do it prior to 1989. I would, when I got an idea, and I think a lot of leaders end up doing these kind of things, particularly entrepreneurs, is that I would come up with all of the questions and find all, do the research and came up with all of the answers. And then I went to the management team and pretty well just said, look what I've done for you. Hmm. And you know, I had good intentions because right. I was thinking I was helping them because they had a lot of work on, you know, on their plate and that they needed to get done on a day-to-day basis. But what was significant in 1989, I had a consultant come in and they did what now they call it a 360 evaluation. That was unheard of back in those days. Mm. And it was in preparation to attend a 3-day workshop that he put on. And that's when he introduced to me one of the issues with me that came from the management team. As well as I even had my wife participate. I even had some of my best friends, you know, be involved. And the horrible truth came in that, Bobby, when you get an idea, ask us to help you. We want to help you. And see, prior to then, I never could figure out when I introduced this good idea. You know, it was always Bobby's idea. Hmm. It wasn't their idea. And I would spend months trying to persuade them that this was something really good we need to do.
Right.
And it was like pulling teeth to get it implemented and executed. And but it was because they had no ownership in it.
Right.
And so that's when I discovered this. Of course, I didn't know to call it at that time, but this participative leadership style that I now call engage to lead.
Hmm. Wow, that's so that was your aha moment, your light bulb.
It was a big aha for me.
Was it humbling? Was it empowering? What were the steps you went through? Because I did something recently similar where the mastermind group encouraged us to ask 10 questions to the top 25 people around us. And one of them was a fill in the blank at the very end that said, what are my blind spots that I may not be aware of? Which means I was 100% guaranteed to get an answer that I didn't want to hear.
Yeah, well... you really asked the right question because when that consultant presented me with the results, that was one of the biggest thing in the results. There were other things I needed to improve on, but to be honest with you, I was flat out mad because right. In my mind, I'm thinking they don't understand me. You know, I went through all this. And fortunately, he presented this late in the afternoon of the first day, and I went out of that meeting. I was upset. I couldn't hardly sleep that night. Mm-hmm. But somehow, the next morning, I got up and I started thinking, you know what? These people are good people. They want the best for me, and I really need to listen to what they had to say. And so that's where it was humbling, just like you said.
Right.
And that's where things really, you know, our company really took another leap in delighting the customer and, of course, profitability.
And I want to stay on that for one more second. I've got some other questions for you about it, but I want to encourage our listeners, if you haven't done something like this, I know that Bobby can consult on this and will give us more information as we continue the discussion. But I'll tell you that it's something you'll get angry about. You might be embarrassed and humbled by it, but then it can be something that's really empowering, and it's something I'm going through right now in my own process. And I had to remember, I asked these questions. You brought the person in to help you. So you kind of brought it on yourself because you wanted to grow. You just didn't realize it was going to shine such a flashlight back on you, right? Or spotlight back on you. What was it like for your team to see that you not only had engaged in learning those things, but that you were willing to roll up your sleeves and grow with them? That must have brought your team closer together.
Well, it definitely did. I brought them together. I had a team meeting of the management team and, you know, some other supervisors, and I shared these results with them. I was very transparent about it. It was just kind of my style to be that way anyway. But it, like you said earlier, it was really a blind spot. And you could have probably heard a pin drop. And nobody said anything like, "Well, Bobby, we tried to tell you," or, you know, it wasn't anything like that. It was like, they felt so good about it. And you know, I shared with them that, you know, I'm going to do this. I need their help to improve in this area. And because I had a habit of being that way. But, you know, when at that, you know, prior, all the years, you know, I say all the years prior to that, but for several years, you know, we went from a very small company of only 5 employees when I took over the business for my dad because he died in 1973. And even though I was involved in the business as going up a little boy, I hung out with my dad all the time and things like that. And I even worked during the business because I went to the university here locally in the town of Wichita Falls, Texas. And I was fortunate to graduate after 3 years at the age of 20. And then my father died. But one thing I didn't know at the time is, and it's a lot of money today for a lot of people, but it was like a mountain back then, is we owed, we were $70,000 in debt, and our gross revenue was less than $90,000. So because of that, I was like the hub and the spoke. And I operated that way for many years, leading up to, learning these kind of things. You know, I kind of went from being this, you know, entrepreneur, very small business, to developing followers. And then I learned in this period of time, this participative leadership style. And then I began to, a few years later, started developing leaders, which, you know, that's kind of like, you know, herding cats. You know, it's just, it's very challenging, but it was very rewarding as well. So
that's really interesting. And tell me about leading leaders, or about managing leaders. You talk about you've got your L&M, your examples of the need for leading and managing all around us. Big difference between leading people and managing things. So how do you help leaders discover their natural bend?
Well, thank you for asking that, because I have a book that's going to be releasing this spring. And the first couple of chapters is dealing with the difference between there is a very distinct difference between leading and managing. Leaders tend to focus on people, and they are more interested in the people side of the business. They're also very interested in how you say and do things. Managers tend to be more interested in the you know, focus on the things of the business or interested in the things of the business. But they're more interested in what they want to say and do. And it's not what I, in my book I have, and World we provide free, is a leading and management managing assessment tool that people, if they buy the book, they can go through that assessment and to discover what is their bent. Of course, my bent is toward leadership. When I answer the questions, I'm just over on the other side of leadership. But about 80% of the people, or their bent, is toward managing. So most people are bent toward that. But the most effective leader, it's not being leader or the manager. It's not like either one of them are better than the other. The most effective leader is developing, having both skills at the same time. And the way I describe it is, I describe it for people that for many years I had to wear two different hats throughout the day. I'd put on one hat and I may talk to the operations people about our trucks and our warehouses because we were in the moving and storage business. Okay. Or I may talk to the human resources people about our hiring practices, you know, are we hiring the right people and so forth. And then I may talk to our, I'm wearing another hat now, you know, the trucks in the warehouse, that's the thing side. Mm-hmm. And then the people side on the human resource. And then I may talk to our CFO or controller, and I'm talking about the financial statements, you know, the things of the business or the banking relationships and those mm-hmm. kind of thing. But then I put on another hat and I'm talking with, someone else. It may be back to the operations person that connected with the human resource department, and we're talking about the people that are working on the trucks, the people that are working in the warehouse. So the most effective leader is like mine. My bent is toward leadership, but I had to learn over the years to get better and better at managing the things of the business. And the thing I also learned is because I wasn't near as strong in the managing of the things, I had to hire people that had more strength in that area to complement me and so that we could be successful in our company.
You know, that's great advice. And those of us that are in ownership or CEO or any kind of leadership position can understand trying to do that balance. Another thing that struck me earlier, and I can relate to it very personally, is, and I share this story when I talk about servant leadership and things like that, is I was an entrepreneur. I always liked to build things. And then I woke up one day and realized that I had a team around me that needed leadership and that I was managing. And so a lot of us kind of fall into the team as we grow. But my passion was not necessarily being a leader. It was to build things and build products and services. And so I think it's challenging sometimes. We're not all born with that natural, well-rounded leadership and management skills, especially some of the entrepreneurs that are wired a certain way with that visionary mindset. I feel like some of us are missing some of those natural coping skills. Are there things we have to learn along the way? So I love what you're sharing here because it's much needed, and we learn the hard way a lot of times.
Yes, that's right.
So tell me about customer service is really important to us. I know there's a correlation between that and the internal relationships. How do you gain and retain loyal customers, and what's the relationship to your internal organization?
Well, you know, that is a very good question. In our company, we had what we call our super objectives. And I do a lot of bicycling. You know, I'm Mr. Idea Man. And I spent weeks just bicycling and thinking about, okay, at the end of the day, what's the bottom line? What do we want to accomplish at the end of the day? And I struggled with it for weeks, you know, bicycling, thinking about it, you know, and those kind of things. And finally, it came to me that this gets back to your question about customer service, is it boiled down to two things that we want to accomplish at the end of the day. And we communicated this on a regular basis with our employees is to delight the customer and increase operating profits. Hmm. Mm. Now, to us, delighting the customer, which is a kind of a you don't hear that kind of word used very often.
Right.
But to us, it was great to delight a customer. Is to we call it a triple E, giving a customer a triple E experience. Hmm. We had these, and this is kind of one of the things that kind of made our company known as far as our culture, is we had these 8 button icons, and one of them was the triple E. And what it amounted to is giving a customer an experience that exceeds their expectations. So, you know, often the term you typically hear is we want to satisfy our customer.
Mm, right.
Well, if you satisfy customers, you just met their expectations. But what we were driven internally is that we wanted to exceed their expectations. And, of course, you know, the big challenge is selling high enough that they'll buy from you, but low enough that you can exceed those expectations
right.
on a regular
yes.
basis. It's a delicate balance.
It really is.
And I can't say we were perfect at it, but it was something that we strove toward every day, is to delight customers and to increase operating profits. And those, out of all the things we measured in our company on our performance, our performance goals, is those were the two big things that we always measured. And even bonuses were based on how successful we were at delighting the customer and increasing operating profits. Mm,
I love that. The word delight is not used as often. It's one that we've brought into our business as well. But you're helping me, because we're newer to this part of it, and we also want to delight. What are some small wins? Can you give an example of some small wins that you've seen with clients or with your organization that were an example of going above and beyond or exceeding expectations? What does that look like?
Well, this sounds kind of simple. But got to remember, I'm from Texas. I'm a simple man with a simple mind here.
Simple is good.
Yeah. This is just an example. Just take for the lady that took her cleaning, you know, the offices and the property and, you know, and all those kind of things. When customers would come to our place of business, or even suppliers, she was a lot of times outdoors or near the front door, you know, cleaning and things like that. This lady had no responsibility of taking care of customers, but she was one of the first people that would greet anybody that came to her, even, you know, well, like I mentioned, supplier. Anybody that came to visit our company, and she was always had a big smile, and she always, like, if they were, you know, parked their car and they're asking, you know, they're trying, you could tell, she could tell, okay, they're trying to figure out where do I go, kind of a thing.
Right.
Well, she would go over there and bring them to the office and introduce them, you know, to someone so that get them to the right person. She may be like cleaning the, you know, the glass doors or something, and someone would come in, and she would always politely, you know, welcome to come in and those kind of things. Those are just some, that's a simple thing to just give you a flavor of delighting the customer. Let me kind of pull in here about the suppliers, because going way back in the 80s, I wanted to treat our suppliers. I wanted to help them and equip them to be the best suppliers they could for us. And the reason why, because I knew if I could help them in providing a service to us to a certain level, that the ultimate customer that's paying us for their services were going to be delighted.
Hmm.
So that's how deep in our organization and the philosophy of which and the culture that we were operating under.
Hmm. That's great. And your team saw how authentic it was and believed and bought into it.
Well, yes. And the neat thing about that, I make this statement, you know, like what I saw in our people was what's in the HR term or human resource terms is discretionary effort. And what I'm referring to is people consistently gave over and above what was required of them. Now, this sounds real rosy and all that kind of stuff. Did we have people problems? Yes, we did. You know, but we dealt with them in a way that our people knew for sure that Bobby Albert really cared for them. But also, Bobby had high expectations to perform to a level of excellence as well.
Right. And that is a balance as well, making sure that you, that when you have your values, that you do follow those. What advice do you have if you have those that are not fitting in with the culture or not following the values? What decisions or what have you seen to either have a transformation or to have a peaceful exit to where they can go somewhere that's a better fit for them?
Well, if somebody if they were not a fit, and is they're going to know it pretty early on. Now, as a starting point, I introduce our core values in 2006. And prior years, for about 15 years prior to then, you know, we had introduced our purpose and our vision for our company. But those values were always there. It took me 2.5 years of introspectively to ask myself some questions like, what am I all about? What did I stand for? Why did I say and do what I just did? And why was it important for me to say and do what I did? It was a tough period of time that I struggled with. But when I finally figured out what my core values were to express it and to introduce it to our people, we started using our core values in the interview process to push that across the table and ask, you know, for them if they felt like these values was a fit for them. We weren't scientific at that time to help people, you know, to take them through some testing or a deeper interview process to see if they displayed those core values. But we were already, because of who I was already, our HR department already was hiring people based on those core values, even though they'd never been expressed, because they knew this is what Bobby wanted done here.
Right.
And but one thing that was fascinating in introducing the core values is that when people came in and they got in and they begin to see it wasn't a fit, we didn't beat them over the head. We would work with them about trying to get on another bus somewhere else. And it was just kind of part of our culture is to help and show care toward people. Because I'm thinking of the reason why I was so sensitive about that is because the kind of reputation that was going to leave in the, you know, when these people left, how they thought about how they were taken care of. And they're going to tell a lot of their friends, especially if you look at the social media, you know, now is about, you know, especially how important it is, because if they had a bad experience, they're going to let the world know
right.
about it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But the other thing I was looking at someday, which this has happened often, I've even fired people, but we took it in a progressive discipline process and, you know, those kind of things. And I had to terminate somebody, and they end up being one of our customers down the road.
Wow. That's powerful to the relationship that you had and your commitment to helping them find something that was a better fit.
Yes, because they're good people. They were good people. They just didn't fit in our organization.
And it's the best service to both of you to identify that early on so that you can both have your purpose and fulfill it to the best that you can. So
yes,
and Bobby, we've got a few more minutes here. You've been a lifelong entrepreneur. You've started 12 different companies, acquired 9 others. You've got a really impressive career from 2005 to 2011, you grew your team or you grew your revenues and profits by 500%. Tell me about goal setting. I can't imagine that you could have that kind of success without setting some goals and being very effective and strategic along the way. What is your process and how do you consult others in effective goal setting?
Okay. Boy, that's a big question. One thing for me personally is it's a process I go through every year going back to the early 90s is I set personal goals just personal goals. But as far as our company, we would have a couple times a year strategic planning sessions. And we would set the strategic plan in place, we would bring other people in. You know, that's kind of the, what we want to accomplish, the direction and those kind of things. But then this is where the participative leadership style comes in, is in the tactical plans of, who's going to make it happen, when's it going to get done, and, those kind of things like that. Hmm. So, and then we would set some measurable performance goals from that, and our people would be involved in that as well. And I'm talking about people even on the front line. So that's an oversimplification, but we had it's one thing to set goals, and of course, I've discovered the word goals. A lot of people have a lot of definitions of what the word goals mean, but it's so important to set goals because it forces you to have discussion when you miss them, or even when you exceed them, or you meet them. And we didn't beat people up, if they missed them or anything like that, but it does force you to have discussion. I keep thinking about the it's a cartoon, a Peanuts cartoon I saw many years ago. I wish I could figure out how to get to it. But I remember Charlie Brown, he was had a bow and arrow, and he was shooting against the fence. And then after he hit the fence, he would go over there and draw the target around where his arrow hit, so it made it look like he hit bullseye target. And a lot of people set goals that way. They wait until after they have seen success or even failure, and then that's their goal. But the key to the goals to me, and I saw in our own company, is once a month we had what we call business reviews. Hmm. And the old days, I never could figure out how I was struggling with people to follow through and to follow up on things. I would, a manager or something, I would have one-on-one meetings, once a month or more than that, but at least once a month, talking about, okay, what was the goal and are we making progress? Those are the two questions. Hmm. So, I struggle with getting things done. I'm somewhat impatient, if you can't tell, but it is getting things done, executed and implemented, timely and those kind of things. Hmm. But we finally implemented this once a month, this business review. And what it was is the leadership team would come to the business review and they would report to their peers. And it was open for any employee in the company to attend a business review. And there was the accountability of having to report to their peers. Really, I saw a dramatic increase in going back to the two questions, what was the goal? What is the goal and are we making progress? And I started seeing as our progress was going faster and faster and faster. But we didn't actually implement that until 2006, right before in 2005. Okay. So I think along with that, as well as introducing our core values, led to our company having the kind of success you mentioned. And in addition, we were recognized as one of the 100 best companies to work for in the state of Texas during that, until I sold the company in 2011 to a public traded company. Wow. So
congratulations on that. So you've got a book coming out soon. Is that something you can share with us yet? You've also got a 5 proven strategies to achieve your goals on your website. Any final things you want to share with us? And then we'll share your website and some other contact information for those that want to learn more.
Yes. If they go to my website right now, I'm writing some blogs on this very topic we're talking about, is this engage to lead, this participative leadership style. The book, which should be released, we're hoping maybe late March to early April, it's titled Principal Profits. And the subtitle is Outward Success is an Inside Job.
Excellent. And so what about any other resources on your site that you want to share?
Well, we have some ebooks that are available that's on the website. There's a lot of other tools people can have access to. And, you know, they can simply email me at bobby@bobbyalbert.com, and I'll do the best I can to answer their questions.
Bobby, thanks for being our guest. I want to encourage our listeners, do go check out his website. I've been on there and reading through his blogs, and even some of the questions I asked today were because I was able to go through as an owner, as an entrepreneur, as a CEO, and read through and see things that were of interest to me to learn about from this great expert that has all of this experience and has learned the hard way on a few things, and then had his aha moments, and has put together this great process and systems and coaching that he does. It's bobbyalbert.com. That's Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y, Albert, A-L-B-E-R-T.com. And you can see his ebook, Discover Your Leadership Identity. He's got 5 proven strategies to achieving your goals. And then make sure that you sign up on his site so you can see and keep an eye out when his new book is coming out. Bobby, thank you so much for being our guest. It's an honor to have you here. And I look forward to reading your book soon and to seeing the next great things that you're doing.
Okay. Well, thank you. I truly have enjoyed this.
You take care, Bobby. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Business Leadership Series, where we engage with leaders who are making an impact on their worlds and who want to share their knowledge and experience for your personal and professional growth. This interview was designed to inspire you to become the best leader you can be.